Good afternoon. It's Tuesday, the 28th February 2017, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. I'm your host, Brian Irish. With me in the studio, Mike Robinson, and we will be joined by live video Skype link by Mark Anderson from American Free Press. Well, really excellent news yesterday, Mike. I was able to watch Vanessa and yourself taking us through events. And as we always say, it's getting more and more difficult to report the news because let's have a look at our first slide today. Welcome to La La Land. Now, I hope that Mark Anderson is going to stay with us, but it's evident now that Britain is degenerating into complete mayhem and chaos. What's the significance of this headline? Well, let's bring in the rest of it. Britain's Department for Communities and Local Government is recruiting for a head of strategy in Brexit, but they must recruit from the EU as well as UK candidates because it's the EU law.
Yes.
So we'll be reporting on that in a bit more detail later in the programme.
Well, let's have a look at the new National Security Advisor. Here he is, Mark Sedwill. Getting the job because Sir Mark Lyle Grant is retiring in April, and Mark Sedwill is going to replace him. He's currently Permanent Secretary at the Home Office, but let's have a look at his career. He was First Secretary in Iraq from 96 to 97, and while he was there, he was serving as a United Nations Weapons Inspector. Then he became Private Secretary to the Secretary of State for Foreign and Commonwealth Affairs, between 2000 and 2002, and of course that included the run-up and preparations for the Iraq invasion in 2003. He then became the ambassador to Afghanistan for the UK between 2009 and 2010, then NATO civilian senior civilian representative in Afghanistan, and he's been permanent secretary at the Home Office since the 1st of February 2013. Now the quote here is taken from the Home Office Improvement Plan 2014, because of course what Mark Sedwill has been, while he's been at the Home Office, he has been a change agent. He's been driving the common purpose through the Home Office. And this quote, leading change also requires us to build common purpose with our stakeholders and delivery partners. That is central to his being. What did Theresa May have to say? She said his experience means that he's ideally qualified to take up the critically important role of National Security Advisor. As well as his recent time at the Home Office, he has served in both Afghanistan and Pakistan, and his wide-ranging experience of foreign and security policy issues. So, looking forward to his contribution.
Well, I would say a dangerous man, politically very dangerous. And we remind people, of course, that it was UK Column that started the exposure of the government's training of the top 200 civil servants. This was to select cohort of 2,000 top civil 200. Servants, 200 yeah. civil servants back in 2007. And we know that later Common Purpose was brought in to give these top 200 special training. So we're now starting to see the effects of this subversion within British government, that it's the political charity Common Purpose that's driving the political agenda.
And these people being placed.
Being placed into key positions of power. Cressida Dick, of course, Common Purpose graduate, highly reframed, recently taken over as boss of the Metropolitan Police, as an example.
Indeed. Well, look, let's head over to the other side of the Atlantic and bring Mark in. So, Mark, Donald Trump giving a speech to the Conservative Political Action Committee on Friday, I think this was, is that correct?
Yeah, it was in National Harbor, Maryland, where it was held last year. That's correct.
So tell us a bit about it.
Well, I listened to the whole speech. It was a very interesting speech, especially the clip that I think you're going to be playing. But he also talked about the media getting it wrong, according to Trump. He said that fake news is the enemy of the people, and that the media took the word fake out and made it sound like Trump believes that all the media is the enemy of the people. But what he specified at CPAC is fake news is the enemy of the people. And of course, it's good to see that he believes the mainstream is the fake news. So he made that clarifying point along with the video clip that I believe we're sharing with our listeners and viewers today.
Well, let's just get straight onto that, and then we can talk about it in a second.
Global cooperation, dealing with other countries, getting along with other countries is good. It's very important. But there is no such thing as a global anthem, a global currency, or a global flag. This is the United States of America that I'm representing. I'm not representing the globe.
So, Mark, what's driving this man? Is this a genuine feeling on his part? Is he genuinely going up against the globalized elite on the planet? Because certainly your friends at Bilderberg Council of Foreign Relations and so on are not going to appreciate this type of sentiment.
That's correct. You know, exactly how sincere he is very difficult to say, of course. We can't get inside his head or heart. But it's interesting that he feels he needs to say this. He also went on to redefine the Republican Party at this same CPAC speech, whereas the Democratic Party used to be pro-labor, anti-free trade. Now Trump is making the Republican Party pro-labor and anti-free trade. He only wants bilateral trade agreements where the U.S. is in the catbird seat, where the U.S. sovereignty reigns supreme, he says. And so Trump is not only backing away from globalism in an explicit way, like we just heard, but redefining Republicans to be more pro-working class, more pro-middle class, and disarm the Democratic Party in that way all that much more, along with taking on the media the way I said he did, and that is saying, as a clarification, that he believes fake news is the enemy of the people, not just the news in general. He tries to give credit where credit's due. And he made the additional point that the First Amendment is for all Americans, not just the press hiding behind it, acting like it has a monopoly on the First Amendment. The First Amendment, he said, is even for me, the president, to speak out against the media in as much as the media critiques him. So he made all these points. But yeah, these anti-globalization comments no doubt are going to rankle the CFR and Bilderberg types as Bilderberg gears up for an expected meeting early June. Possibly the United States is beginning to shape up a little bit. It looks like they're going to meet in the U.S., but that's by no means secure yet or confirmed. But I think all in all, it reflects on the American people more than anything that President Trump feels he has to take this stance because he senses the people that put him in office, the voters, don't want this unmitigated globalization. They don't want a global anthem. They don't want a global government. They want national identity. He certainly feels he has to say it. And I believe there's at least a degree of sincerity. I'll just cap my remarks by saying that he speaks to Congress tonight in his first joint session of Congress this evening, February 28th, Tuesday. And we'll see if he says something like this again and how much what he says tonight mirrors the CPAC speech. It'll be interesting to compare the two.
So, Brian, it's interesting that he's taking this approach. And yet when we see George Osborne or Theresa May, George Osborne speaking yesterday or writing in The Times, or Theresa May in recent speeches, or Mark Carney, when they talk about globalization, they also recognize that people are disenfranchised from globalization. But they say, well, we don't need to worry about that because we'll just, another couple of pounds will sort the problem out.
It is interesting, and I think we need to watch President Trump very closely. He's doing a lot of things which seem to make sense and are clearly bringing the American public on board. Here, something different is going on because we've got total talk about global Britain. Is this Theresa May and her banking friends controlling things through the money power base, and the Americans are later going to be brought online through that money control?
Mm. Well, Mark, you wanted to highlight this, Trump foreign policy changing and disrupting global norms. This is from the Women's Foreign Policy Group.
Yes,
go ahead.
Well, they had a program yesterday at New York University at Washington, D.C. I've been there. It's on L Street. They have some pretty thought-provoking programs, although it's very much shifted toward the internationalist viewpoint. Julie Hirschfeld, I believe she's with the New York Times without looking it up, and Jay Solomon, and a New York Times editor, and one other person, a total of four, got together and they critiqued Trump. And some of what they said was, I believe, rather factual in critiquing what it's like to cover the Trump administration and talking about there's factions within the White House, the ideological faction as typified by Steve Bannon, one of Trump's top advisors, and then the more military faction where you have, you had Flynn, you had Michael Flynn who had to step down due to these fuzzy, ambiguous Russian allegations, and McMaster and others that come through the sort of the military faction. And they talked about how the Trump White House seems to have these different factions. And I think there's a certain amount of truth to that. They're talking about their firsthand coverage. But what was interesting was as they got toward the end of their speech, and what you're showing on the screen, or you're about to show right now, this magazine cover, they began to allude subtly, not too stridently, but they began to allude how Trump is interrupting global norms in terms of him being a manifestation of this menace of fascism. The media, whether it's Newsweek's coffee table magazines that are littering U.S. grocery stores shelves right now, or through other means, the media, even if they acknowledge Trump's accomplishments, the media is basically saying that Trump, like Marie Le Pen, like Brexit, is indicative of a rebirth of the Hitler worldview.
Well, Mark, okay, you can continue that in a second, but I just wanted to interject with this one, because obviously that Hitler edition of Newsweek has come out not too long after the special inauguration issue of Newsweek. And of course, here's an image that somebody has posted to a forum showing that both on the same shelf at the same time. It's hard to imagine that wasn't an intentional decision.
I can't see how it wouldn't be intentional, Mike. I've seen this stuff before, these coffee table magazines purporting to dissect the and anything that's even slightly right to the extreme left of the internationalists, at least the foot soldiers of the left, at least the internationalist foot soldiers are to the left. That doesn't mean the whole international establishment is necessarily left wing by definition. There's the one worlders kind of stand above that left-right paradigm. I think the left-right paradigm is mostly for the natives and the peasants to fight it out and to divide us and to create chaos. And out of that chaos comes their new world order. I think we know that. But nevertheless, they want to smear a smear wound, you might say, a big, broad smear against anyone who doesn't agree with the world consolidation agenda. And so this Hitler thing comes out, and now they can use that as an umbrella and say that Trump and Brexit and Marie Le Pen, all of it falls under the neo-Hitler umbrella. And this is a way the weaponized media, the fake news works. And one of the main fundamental reasons I brought this out was because we always think, you know, mainstream newspapers, radio and television broadcasts are the fake news. That's where the propaganda is. But through the magazine media and through the entertainment media, like we're seeing here, they the fake news and the assault on nationalism, the assault on populism, they broaden it out through all these different mediums. And it's important to keep that in mind. It's not just the daily news reports on CNN and the BBC that are propagandistic.
Yeah, okay. Okay, thanks, Mark. What's next?
Well, we start off with just a couple of adverts. The first one is that Ian Crane will be speaking on fracking tonight. That's at Kingsbridge Community College, Devon. He'll be in the English room. And his talk is from 6 o'clock till 8 o'clock this evening. So if you're in the local Devon area or you can travel, hopefully you'll get along to support Ian in his excellent work exposing the dangers of fracking.
Another reminder of Gilad Atzmon in Glasgow. That's on March the 30th, 2017, between 7 till 9:30. Get along to that if you can. And a reminder that tomorrow, Vanessa Bailey will be speaking at the Marx Memorial Library, Clerkenwell Green, London. Her talk is entitled Aleppo, Fall or Liberation. And I also just wanted to remind everybody that, of course, UK Column News now available on Alternate Current Radio. If you're in the States and you want to listen to the podcast at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And we're also now included in the Truth Seeker app. And I've got to thank the guys at the Truth Seeker You can get this via truthseekerapp.net. And there's, well, we're on there, Alternate Current Radio, all their programming is on there, and a whole bunch of other alternative media outlets. So thanks for that.
And can I ask viewers and listeners to give us as much support as possible on this business of spreading the news about the UK column to other people? We know that we are reaching a big audience. We also know that our viewing figures are capped. Mike has had the interesting experience of watching viewing figures decrease. And we get wonderful stories like the lady who contacted us from West London, who said, "I've just found out about UK column." And when I said to her, "And how did you find out?" She said, "Oh, my friend in America said you should be watching this excellent news program." So we need as much help to spread sideways, as it were, because it's clear that all is not entirely straightforward with viewing figures on the internet. Well, let's come back to La La Land, and we can't get more bizarre than this. Here we've got gov.uk advertising head of strategy and Brexit. This is part of for a job for the Department for Communities and Local Government. There's the closing date, 8th of March 2017. So we scroll down. We notice there's a very low salary for this kind of thing. So somebody's going to be paid between £60,000 and £70,000. Mike, you said, well, of course, the Prime Minister only receives remuneration like that. However, civil servants traditionally are receiving very, very much higher salaries.
Well, indeed, so, and our new National Security Advisor is going to be receives around £170,000-£180,000 a year.
Yes, and about £400,000 a year for running the BBC. So a mere £60,000 is all they're willing to pay to get us out of the European Union. Well, why should that be? Because if you take the time to actually look at the information, you see this. It says nationality requirements open to UK, Commonwealth and European Economic Area. Now, I thought this was very interesting, and I thought possibly I was mistaken in my understanding of the European Economic Area. So I did a little bit more research, and we actually find this is the European Union. So I phoned up the department this morning. I spoke to a very young and very fausty media gentleman, and I simply pointed out there was a certain irony that UK had to recruit possibly a European in order to take us out of the EU. But he assured me there was nothing unusual in this because it was the law. So I said to him, "So you mean that EU law says that we must recruit from the EU in order to find the person to take us out of the EU?" It went very quiet and he said, "It's the law." So I asked next whether that media person was giving the official opinion of the department itself, and he assured me he was. So we needn't bother with our MPs anymore or senior civil servants, because the media or press officers are the people now running La La Land as we recruit from the EU to get the person to take us out the EU. Mark, if I may, you live in America, which has its own interesting problems, of course, but we are descending into something which is way beyond the Simpsons in UK. It's almost getting hard to deal with it without laughing, but it's such a serious matter. Any comment you like?
Well, certainly the media in the US is the most farcical thing right now, Brian, creating a circus-like atmosphere, a nightmare that won't end, you might say. I could go a lot of directions with what you're saying, but I think Congress, some in Congress, Lindsey Graham, John McCain come to mind, and certain elements of the media, the George Soros infection, you might say, the Koch brothers, Sheldon Adelson, the Jewish money magnate out of Nevada, the people behind the scenes that are creating all the chaos in the U.S., that creates kind of a la-la land here, because up is down, down is up, water is no longer wet, and the sun no longer rises. So it's not quite the same kind of comical situation as the UK. It's a little different variation, but it's getting hard to know what reality is, as you guys have acknowledged. That's why you call it La La Land. But of course, that's why we're here. That's why we're growing our media as the other media declines, because reality needs to come back, as if we should even need to say it's crazy when we live in a world where we say we need to recover reality or get back to reality, but it's very true.
It's very true. We need to get back to reality and common sense. Well, we always encourage our viewers and listeners to not only listen to UK Column, watch UK Column, but do their own research. And we're going to encourage you on all of the segments in today's news. Let's have a look at the people who are there in the Department for Communities, Local Government. Well, of course, we've got Sajid Javid. We've got Gavin Barwell MP, Marcus Jones, Andrew Percy, Lord Bourne of Aberystwyth. Have a look at these people, have a look at their interests, have a look at their experience. And we encourage you to do the same on the management team. Some very, very interesting people. A lot of experience in the banking sector, Mike. It's very noticeable that these people, we are told, are independent civil servants, but their whole history says that they've got vested interests.
But the special representative, it must be said, brings a lot of weight to the
Well, Eric Pickles at the bottom, of course, is the man who said he was an unlikely revolutionary. Some of the papers thought he was sort of joking in that comment. I don't think he was joking, because we have Conservative MPs who are on public record saying that there needed to be a period of positive destruction in public services before we could move on. So Eric Pickles is the big society man, and this is communitarianism by the back door. Eric Pickles, very big back door, of course. Now, let's have a look at this gentleman, because this is Gavin Barwell MP. He's one of the people named. And I just found it very interesting that if we have a look at his career, he's special in as much as he served as a government whip and a controller of HM Household. But there we are. He is a government whip. And perhaps this is the time to remind ourselves that Conservative whip Tim Fortescue on record saying that Tory whips protected child abusers in order to get other people to do as required. So my question is, is this still the policy of Tory whips, that they use what I would consider to be blackmail over child abuse to get other people to carry out their agenda? And we now understand that the police have finally woken up to the Tim Fortescue video, especially in relation to the Edward Heath investigation. And so that we don't forget, let's remember, of course, that people with very, I'm going to say, slack morality over the rights of child abusers, also known as paedophiles, have been in government and indeed are still in Westminster. So we've got a picture of Harriet Harman and Patricia Hewitt here, who of course were working with Liberty when Liberty was working to ease in the idea of paedophilia into the accepted norm. And we've got a picture of the then chief coroner, who declared that his campaign group supported the civil liberties of everyone, including paedophiles. So this is a very interesting situation. And Mark, there's a couple of people, while we've been reporting the news and before this article, are saying that President Trump also seems to be starting to point a finger at child abusers in America with the possibility of stronger sentences. Now, I don't know whether you are aware of this, but if you are, perhaps you could give us some comment.
No, I'm not aware of that in detail. He did issue the memo trying to push back on the transgender bathroom movement, indicating, although Trump doesn't indicate this strongly, but nevertheless indicating that Trump at least is trying to entertain the idea of traditional Christian values. So I think more will come out in the near term, Brian, about where Trump stands on that. Right now, I don't really have enough to go on other than that anti-transgender bathroom directive, where he really just wants the states to handle those issues and not have the federal government deal with that at all. And of course, the transgender community is overreacting that way big time, even as they push their agenda on shows like When We Rise that ABC wheeled out last night on national television, a very explicit show about sexual license and whatnot. So that overall agenda that includes pedophilia, that includes pederasty, is moving forward in the U.S. So we'll see what President Trump says about this. I'll just add one note. that they had to take a break showing that show When We Rise this evening, tonight, because of the Trump speech to Congress and the transgender queer community, which on its fringes includes pedophilia. They were pushing back, saying we shouldn't have to take a break on showing our show just because the president is speaking. So a lot of between that fringe section of humanity, that fringe faction, you might say, and the president. This is the bigger picture, but the specifics on what you're talking about will remain to be seen. So,
okay, thank you very much.
Right, internet safety then, because the government is pushing forward with this. They are really concerned about it. They've launched a major new drive on internet safety, they say, ensuring the UK becomes the safest place in the world for young people to go online. This is the Culture Secretary, Karen Bradley, driving this, but on behalf of the Prime Minister, so that has to be made clear. She is pushing forward with this on behalf of the Prime Minister. There's going to be a green paper this summer. And there's going to be a report by what's being described as a leading academic. That's Professor Sonia Livingston. She's been commissioned to provide up-to-date evidence of how young people are using the internet, the dangers they face, the gaps that exist in keeping them safe. And she's got a background in this sort of thing. She's a professor of social psychology, head of department of media and communications, London School of Economics and Political Science. And she's dedicated, according to her Wikipedia page at least, much of her research to children, media and the internet. So what did Karen Bradley have to say? She said the internet has provided young people with amazing opportunities, but it has also introduced a host of new dangers which children and parents have never faced before. It's increasingly clear that some behaviour is unacceptable offline, which is unacceptable offline, is being tolerated or even encouraged online, sometimes with devastating consequences. And the government in this press release is saying that, pointing out that a study last year for the NSPCC and the Children's Commissioner found that 13% of 11 to 16-year-olds had reported that they'd taken topless pictures of themselves, and 3% had taken fully naked pictures of themselves. So, Brian, it's pretty interesting that if Donald Trump is coming down on making sentences more strict for this type of for adults getting involved in this type of behaviour, it's a bit interesting that in Britain we are reducing sentences.
We're reducing sentences, but we also can have a look at the mixed messages over who's causing the problem, because what we're saying there is children are getting themselves into trouble by what they do on the internet. Mm. That's the message. And they're taking topless pictures of themselves. I wonder whether some of the children might have seen the topless pictures of Brooks Newmark, of course, Tory MP, who was photographed in a bathroom virtually naked, not quite, as at some form of sexual photograph. But not to worry, because that was just a politician, Mike.
And he took the photograph of himself, so it was a selfie. Was he influenced by what he was reading on the internet, do you think?
Possibly. We've no way of knowing. Well, let's bring in the BBC. Always good when the subject is child abuse, because filmmaker Stacey Dooley is crowing at the moment. Well, she's complaining, in fact, because she's been in Japan and those nasty Japanese police picked her up and held her for 2 hours. So she was in the country making a documentary investigating child sexual exploitation. Some of the men she'd photographed took exception, complained to the police. She was picked up. Police gave her a hard time, told her to get rid of the film footage. I don't know whether she did or not. But my goodness, those nasty Japanese people. So remarkable that the BBC's got money, presumably, to send this lady to Japan. There's no child abuse in Westminster. And of course, despite the testimony of thousands of child abuse victims in UK who say they've received appalling treatment by the police, this lady prefers to go to Japan to see what the Japanese are doing. Well, this is a bit more of the article here. It says that, where are we? It says, speaking about the film, Ms. Dooley said, our documentary on Japan essentially focuses on the fact that the Japanese government, only made it illegal to possess child pornography in 2014. Now, what she's getting at here is apparently Japanese men can choose to spend the evening holding hands. So there's It's highly suspicious, I agree, but they can spend the evening fully clothed with a teenage girl. That's not illegal. We set out to try and understand why it took a privileged country like Japan so long to come to this conclusion, and also to see if the change in their law had made any real difference on the ground. So there's the BBC spending public money in order to get amongst the child abuse problem in Japan, but there isn't anything to see in UK. Well, we always like to have a look at the journalists themselves, so go and have a look at Stacey Dooley's Twitter page. You'll find that she's very big on President Trump. She's not so quite so big on child abuse, but she's very, very big on her French bulldog puppy. So a rather childish Twitter page, but here's the meat. So not only is she working in Japan, apparently she's also been looking after, this one's missing children in Canada. So the problem is always overseas, Mike. It's never in UK. And the BBC, for some reason, can't investigate child abuse in UK. And then what happens to the information she does produce? It goes here to BBC Three. This is the first time I've ever looked at this page. It is appalling. And to my mind, this absolutely takes a very serious subject and completely rubbishes it in social media.
Yeah.
So I'd guess that the government expert is not going to be looking at this form of abuse.
Indeed.
Yeah. So where does this take us? Well, we've now got reports, as you've said, Mike. Here we've got police chief calling for counselling and rehab for lower level paedophiles. We can't possibly put them in prison because we haven't got enough space. So they need a little bit of rehab. Melanie Shaw can take up a prison space, but not the paedophiles. So they should not face criminal charges for looking at child porn, Britain's top child protection policeman says. So this is the chief constable of Norfolk Constabulary. And just before I open this up to a little bit of discussion, we remind ourselves what he said. He said that there's an increase in reporting of sexual abuse, including historical cases. And this has led to the policing system reaching saturation point. So there's so many criminals, we think we should go soft on them, because otherwise we can't deal with it. And in comes the NSPCC, and it agrees the huge rise in offences made it impossible to arrest our way out of the situation. So let's go easy on the child abusers. What a thing for the NSPCC to say. And then in comes the statistics. The Jimmy Savile scandal has led to a sharp increase in historical abuse reports, and the police receive 112 complaints a day and carry out more than 70,000 investigations. Now, I'm just going to put this in context, because back in 2015, there was a report by the government around Rotherham. And in that, they said that between August 2010 and October 2011, at least 2,409 children were sexually exploited. I've put a little bit of nonsense mathematics together at the bottom of the screen, because what I couldn't establish is how many children were actually being abused each year and how many people were being convicted by it.
Because there are no statistics kept?
There are statistics, but they're very confusing. I called the Office of National Statistics this morning to see what they could tell me. They said they would come back. So we'll keep our viewers and listeners informed. But if you go looking at how many children were abused, we don't really know. So I'm just going to move on through. I'll just bring up this one here. This is the lady reporting in 2015. This is the Deputy Children's Commissioner, Sue Belowitz. And what does she say? We live in a highly sexualized world in which, for the most part, it's considered quite acceptable to do as they want. That's her wording. With females, and too many females think that something they must comply with because they think it's part of growing up. So she seems to be blaming the children, to my mind, but maybe it's my imagination. Then she went on to say this: child porn and the proliferation of indecent images of children and all the stuff we're seeing on social media, which is having an impact on young people growing up and their impressions of sex and sexuality. Blame the children. Mm-hmm. But no statistics on how many convictions there have been for child sexual abuse. And that's all a bit woolly.
And so this is replicated at the EU level at Europol, which, as we've mentioned a couple of times in recent weeks, recently published an article, a news item for themselves, saying what a great job they were doing identifying the victims of sexual exploitation, including children, 10,000 of them identified. So they had identified the people. And when I went back to them and said, well, how many convictions have arisen out of this? And that's where it all got very,
very wobbly
indeed, because, of course, they don't keep that information. So we have an enforcement organization that's supposed to be prosecuting people for committing crimes. They've identified the victims, but they haven't actually gone the next step, it seems, because they if they were convicting people, surely this is something they would be quite happy to discuss as well.
You think there would be a precise accuracy, not only on the number of missing children per year, but the number who are abused? And let's not forget Prime Minister Theresa May and Home Secretary Amber Rudd still totally unconcerned that a mere 345 Syrian children simply disappeared in UK. They came here for protection. They've disappeared, but the British government not interested.
No. Okay. Innovation, Brian, and we've got Michael Fallon here because this is all about defence innovation. He gave a major speech, as he's describing, as it was described, at the University of Oxford, and he announced the formation of a world-class panel which will help challenge and drive the Ministry of Defence's innovation agenda. And it's called the Defence Innovation Advisory Panel. So he was speaking to engineering students, academics, apprentices, and he said that he named three members of the new panel. So he's going to have Major Tim Peake. He's going to have a couple of other people. But basically, this is all about driving forward the MOD's innovation initiative, which aims to encourage imagination, ingenuity and entrepreneurship in the pursuit of maintaining a military advantage in the future. So that's what he has to say. Well, let's look at what he has to say. Backed by £800 million Innovation Fund, we want to transform defence and work with small firms, academics and others to find solutions to the threats for our industry. So let's have a look at some of the slides and some of the information that they provided for this. So here we go. Defence and Security Accelerator is what's called the Innovation Fund themed competition to revolutionise the human information relationships for defence. This first briefing was given by Rob Sully, who's head of the Defence and Security Accelerator. And I just thought we would choose a couple of these. So this took place on the 23rd of February. As I say, they've just released this information now. The first thing that I thought was quite interesting was to have a look at the threat matrix that they've identified. So on here, we've got on the left-hand side, level 0 to level 5, and along the bottom, level A to level F. And we've got on the bottom left-hand side, Libya and the Taliban as being the least important threats that we face. And then we've got Syria and Daesh. And then we've got Iran and Ukraine. And, of course, the biggest threats to our existence are Russia and China.
There's got to be a mistake with this, Mike, because I definitely remember that China was invited in to help rebuild our nuclear infrastructure. So I think there's been some mistake on this threat matrix.
Well, in fairness, because although this comes from his presentation, he has lifted these slides from the Joint Warfare Directorate, which is right. a NATO organisation.
Oh, right. Maybe NATO doesn't know that we invited the Chinese in to rebuild our nuclear infrastructure.
It's quite possible. But let's get into the meat of this then. The challenge. This is the challenge, and this is the context that this is being presented. The challenge, the first challenge is that the distinction between war and peace and home and away are increasingly blurred. Mm. I find that a staggering statement, Brian.
It's very, very, very dangerous.
Very dangerous. The distinction between war and peace and home and away are increasingly blurred. So here's some deductions. We lie on the cusp of some major changes to how we employ the military instrument strategically, operationally, and tactically. The change required in some areas is so fundamental that it is both difficult to conceive and disorientating.
Yeah, that's put in there so that it's basically saying some of you will not quite be bright enough to understand what we're doing.
Right. So Of course, they will be bright enough. It's going to make them very uncomfortable. And I think the point that needs to be made here is that, of course, when people are made that uncomfortable, they maybe have the tendency to think that the best thing to do is to leave the organisation. But of course, if you leave an organisation where this kind of stuff is being pushed through, what do you leave behind? A hole which is going to be filled by another Common Purpose graduate.
Yeah, well, this is how it's done.
Right, and just the language that's being used in this are conceptual thinking, and it's all about socio-technical. It's not about the military or
procurement,
procurement and development or defence. It's about socio-technical. So let's look at the Royal Navy's approach to innovation. I'm sure, being a retired naval officer, you will recognise this, Brian.
I'm glad to say I don't, Mike. I served a long time ago now, 20-odd years ago, but we had a Navy and the gear worked. We've now got a Navy which is falling apart. Is it due to this sort of language and this focus? And I think it is.
Absolutely. So we're looking at a socio-technical response. It's not just the kit, a service-based approach. So what are they going to do here? They're going to run defence as a service. Are we going to get you buy a service from Google or from... So our defence is going to be provided by the cloud?
Well, we're just going to buy into the new procurement. And as David Ellis has been warning, we're going to see the Americans simply hoover up Rolls-Royce and British Aerospace. So presumably all of the British military equipment will just be leased from some company.
Right. And that's hinted by the next point, buy, use and discard. So you get rid of it as quickly as possible. Because it's a service and you don't have, you know, you're buying into any particular infrastructure. Human limitations, this is where it starts to get really interesting, because they start talking about the limitations of humans and how we need to develop. What this innovation is all about is AI, it's artificial intelligence. And what they're saying is that humans are limited because we've got limited attention capacity, limited short-term memory capacity, difficulty with rapid recall, difficulty in spotting patterns spread out over time, many cognitive biases. So we might not want to carry out that extrajudicial killing because we may have a cognitive bias there against doing that.
Yeah, so, but you can get the drone in to do it.
Right, but that's a limitation of the human. Yeah. So we've got to get rid of humans out of this situation, and we've got to replace them with automation. But the difficulty with here is that current automation has no self-awareness. It has typically static behaviours. It can't innovate, work or generalise to select appropriate approaches or generate new ones. So this is where we're going with this, developing autonomous artificial intelligence defence. It's not going to be about defence. It's going to be
power
autonomous
projection.
Drones, power projection, but there's not going to be any human decision making in it. And, you know, that is particularly worrying.
So the drone goes off on a totally autonomous mission. It comes back. It's killed 50 people. Who's responsible for those decisions? Well, nobody, because it was AI and we can all go home and sleep soundly.
Absolutely. Mark, any thoughts?
Certainly. This goes hand in hand with stuff I've been reporting in American Free Press and on my truthhound.com blog and on this show and other venues for quite a while. This is part and parcel, I believe, at least partly, of the Bilderberg agenda. Why Bilderberg has high-tech people coming together to join the old guard at Bilderberg, the Rockefellers and all that, to put together this kind of technical input into the overall governance structure to where we're taken into this brave new world. I hope I'm coming through.
Yes.
I do believe, based on what I've seen, this is partially related to Bilderberg and why they had Googleberg in the UK back in 2013, right before Bilderberg met at the Grove Hotel in Watford, that the technology sector is leading the nation states representatives at Bilderberg and at other venues toward this brave new world, this AI world that you're talking about. That's a little speculative what I'm saying, but there is some factual basis to it as well in some areas. But I've seen studies also where they're talking about total information awareness, to where supercomputers would assess a threat, and based on data the computers have collected about different regions or cities or even individuals, based on that data, the supercomputers with their mega databases would then send a drone off on its mission, be it an airborne drone or a seaborne drone or even a land-based drone, and execute the kill, as Brian indicate automated. And this is ultimately where they're headed, total automated warfare.
Yep.
That's where they're headed, however unrealistic it may be, and certainly how totalitarian and Orwellian it is. That is their ideal, and that's where they're headed with this. And as you say, that would mean parceling out the military, almost providing the military through the cloud as a service, privatizing even something as fundamental to the nation state as the military, privatizing even that, just as they would privatize water and other things that are fundamental to human existence, water delivery systems, water purification systems, bodies of water, privatization across the board.
Absolutely.
I'll just add a little bit into that, if I may, Mark, and that is to say we should need to remember, of course, that the AI, the algorithms, the mathematical algorithms that are being put forward have principally come out of human minds. They now may be developed with AI machines, but principally you have a human mind driving. And we also know, of course, that by the psychometric tests, we're seeing lower and lower empathy people selected in order to run these programs. So by the time we get to the point where perhaps psychopaths are running this type of program and developing these algorithms, we're heading into immensely dangerous territory, which most of us really need to be aware of. Okay, well, Mark, thank you very much for joining us. We'll just end by saying that David Scott and myself were able to meet up with the Doherty family, Brian and Janice Doherty, over the weekend. We can tell our audience that they are safe and well at the moment, albeit having an extremely, extremely hard time in their present location in Ireland. And we just want to say our hearts go out to them, really. What can you say to a lovely couple who have lost their children to the state through no fault or crime of their own? This is the state of UK at the moment, stealing children, and as we've indicated in the news report, covering up for the abuse of children, whether that occurs in Westminster or at lower level with lower level street gangs. So we're in very, very dangerous times. But good news, at least, is that Brian and Janice Doherty are alive and well, but reflect a terrible time with the British state and child stealing. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow. Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.